1000-watt News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chimps in the PC. It is Sunday, the 28th of January, Anno Domini 2007, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And at 7
Where's
minutes
my microphone?
Got everything else ready and never looked for his microphone. At 7 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. Now, before, let me start with this fascinating piece of news for all those of you who are about halfway through your pirated download of Microsoft Vista off of the peer-to-peer networks. You should know that about half of the downloads claiming to be free versions of Vista are actually malicious Trojan horse software. With Vista's consumer launch coming, what, tomorrow?
Tuesday.
Hackers have been, what's today? Oh, yeah, 28.
Today's Sunday.
Hackers have been bombarding discussion boards with offers of cracked versions of Windows Vista, which are typically being distributed on peer-to-peer networks. They offer downloads of the operating system that say they skip Vista's activation process, which is supposed to prevent users, of course, from running illegal copies. Users who fall for the scam end up with some pretty nasty problems. Researchers have found malicious keylogging software and spyware in about half the downloads it examined recently. Pirated versions of Vista have been in circulation for several months now, and one Vista crack has already been identified as a complete Trojan. It doesn't even run Windows. It just is a Trojan. It's an effective technique. Somebody that's stealing software to begin with is not going to raise a fuss if the software turns out to be malicious. So those of you who are gleefully waiting for your download of pirated Vista to finish, remember about half of you are going to get a Trojan horse.
One thing we should also mention, we were talking about it just the past couple of weeks. With Vista coming out this Tuesday, a lot of folks have been worried and questioning us, you know, well, I've still got Windows XP. Do I have to, you know, automatically change? Well, Microsoft has just come out and announced that Microsoft will still provide mainstream support for the next 5 years and an extended report support for XP Media Center and XP Home. So that's a total of 10 years from right now. They're still going to be supporting Windows XP.
After they previously had announced that XP support would stop now.
Yes. And right. I think, again, because of the pressure in the economic times, folks just can't afford it.
Right.
I mean, it's...
Oh, two things. First, change the... on the Vista machine that I brought in a Vista machine. I brought in a laptop with Vista on it. Change the thing. When the screensaver goes into effect, because I've got it set for 5 minutes in a locked machine and I don't want to have to go put my password in every 5 minutes.
That was never five minutes just then.
Two things. First, let's announce the new chat software. Last week, we tried to do an online chat, and it didn't work particularly well because I never bothered to read the fine print that said the free software I was downloading only allowed 10 users. I've now got a new piece of software that allows 250 users, and if that's not enough, I can up it later. But you can get to that from nickf.com/X7chat2. Don't ask me why. It's just what I put down. X7chat2 /login.php. Steve's going to put that in the forum. So if those of you who were in on the chat last week or didn't get to be in on the chat last week want to join the chat room, we're not going to be in there spending a lot of time talking to people because we're trying to do, I don't know, a radio show. But we will be checking in to see how you've corrected our answers throughout the thing. And I do have XP running on a system sitting here. It is a 2 gigahertz machine.
All right, where did they hide it?
It's
not in display properties anymore.
No, it's not anywhere it used to be. That's the other thing. Everything you know about
computers just when
is
you
wrong.
Learn where yeah. things are, yeah. they turn around and change them.
Yeah. It's a 1.8 gigahertz machine with a gig of RAM and a 40 gig hard drive. Took just over half an hour to install. It's a clean install. I wiped the hard drive. Took 32 minutes and 22 seconds to do the install. Another 3.5 minutes to install updates over 100 megabit per second line. Used about 7.5 gig after the install, which actually used a significant portion of my 40 gig hard drive. Sound doesn't work at all.
Oh, properties is gone. Right click doesn't give
it's
you
all,
properties
yeah,
anymore.
There's no sound. It says the sound card is there and working, but there's no sound. There's a camera built in, but it doesn't even recognize that. I did that was Vista Enterprise. I also did an Office Enterprise install on the same machine. Took just over 13 minutes and used 1.7 gig after install. So it installs pretty quickly and it boots up nice and fast. But the real problem is it's sluggish. And I suspect that I have a 2 gigahertz machine with a gig of RAM, but I suspect the problem is the video. It's just not fast.
Yeah, it's you want, that's the other key thing with Vista. You want regular, the memory that normally is on the motherboard,
yeah,
is going to take from the memory of your machine. So if you've got a, say, a gig in the machine,
right,
and you've got onboard video, now you don't have a gig to run Windows Vista.
Right.
You've got less than that. And I think Vista wants a minimum of 128.
Right.
So you're already down it. So you want a better graphics card if you can even put it in some of these machines.
Well, this is a laptop. It's stuck with what it's got. Now,
yeah,
when I'm running Linux on that thing, I can get wiggling windows and the spinning cube and the whole. I can do all of that stuff, but under Vista, it's terribly.
That's
slow
the Apple
and
commercial where PC's getting his upgrades. So
yeah,
he's
right.
In a hospital gown, and I got a little queasy when people work in my insides.
Right. All right, Dan, we got time for a call. Now that we've done all this other stuff,
sure. Why not?
Sure. Why not? Our first caller is Marty from Niagara Falls. Slowly, we turn to Marty. How are you, Marty? What's your question?
Hey. Good morning, everybody. Having made the quantum leap from a Windows 95 computer that's actually still running to a nice new 20-inch Mac, I'm trying to figure out if there's, I know that Macs aren't as unsecure, but should there be some, you know, virus-type things that I should have on it?
See, here's a guy who learned his lesson on 95. Yeah. He needs to have security.
Yeah.
But it's still running.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Technically, at this point, there are no Mac viruses yet, but that doesn't mean there may not be some in the future. Although the fact that every time there's an article about Windows viruses and they say there aren't any Mac ones yet, somebody would have wanted to be the first by now.
Yeah, you would think so.
So there are antivirus programs, Norton Antivirus from Symantec, Intego Antivirus or Virus Barrier. There's a free one called ClamX that came from the Windows or the Unix world. And basically what they do now is just scan for Windows viruses and prevent you from accidentally passing on a Windows virus.
Yeah, if nothing else, you get to be a good network citizen.
Right. It's likely you have gotten a Windows virus through your email. It just can't do anything on the Mac.
Okay.
So the antivirus programs will prevent you from passing them on to other Windows users.
Now, also, like on the Windows machines, you run your cleanup and you empty the cache. I found that, but is there ways to run like checks or to clean out like the internet cache, things like that?
Yeah, there's an empty cache command inside of Safari.
Yeah, I found.
And then there's a full reset that clears all the cache, the cookies, the autofill entries, and everything that you've entered into Safari.
Yeah, I've seen all that.
Yeah. Yeah, there is no spyware on the Mac, so there are anti-spyware programs you can buy for the Mac, but since there's no spyware, they're kind of silly at the moment.
Does the Word, I bought the program for Microsoft Word and everything for the Mac. Are they any more susceptible to problems? Or?
Yes, but the Word macro viruses that will and the Excel macro viruses are all based on Windows code. So you get a virus that does, say, delete C:**, can't do anything on your Mac because that's a Windows instruction.
That's assuming it's doing something to the hard drive. If it's actually doing something to your document, the most insidious Excel things actually just change a decimal point here and there.
Right, just changing random numbers. And many of those will run on the Mac because it's the Windows or the Microsoft Visual Basic code.
All right, we're going to... We got to take a quick break now. I think that's a lot. We've got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dan Cole, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you. When we come back, we'll talk about the free Wi-Fi scam. It's 16 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Whams.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And like 20 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites.
Journey.
Yep. Before we go too much farther, I don't remember if we mentioned it in the first block. Archive server is down. We know it's down. I've been doing a lot of hardware troubleshooting on it in between life. And I've got...
What, you got a life?
Yeah.
Well, since when did you get one?
I wish I did.
Where can we buy one?
Yeah, exactly. What I've done is I've got the I've got all of the Wham Soundbite shows off the server now. So I made sure those are all saved, and I've just got to either... I'm still testing memory on the thing to see if it's a memory problem, but I tend to think it's actually just a hard drive. So we'll have to replace that, and I'll rebuild it, and we'll get it all up and running again. But it's happening in between other stuff. We have this week alone at work, budget. We have budget. performance appraisals. I've got to give an exam this week that I've had to write. And, we have a new dean starting on Monday or Tuesday or whatever day.
And plus
next Friday.
And plus you're here every morning.
I'm here every morning. I'm the new, Dan and I spend the mornings together. I'm the entertainment reporter for the morning show on Wham. So I get to talk about all the
My big question is, and you know I've criticized you on this quite a bit.
Yeah, you have.
When the hell do you sleep?
Well, you know.
And have time for your family. Hello, you're lighting the candle at both ends, dude.
I'm actually burning it in the middle now.
Yeah.
The thing is that everybody always says that to me, and I've always laughed it off. And lately, I've begun to think about it. When somebody says, I think, where do I get all this time? I don't know. At any rate, I don't sleep much, and that has a lot to do with it. I have psychotic episodes once in a while.
I worry about you.
I have psychotic episodes once in a while from not enough sleep. But hey, at least I'm
back to the 60s.
Everything else is good. Oh man, I love the 60s.
If you can remember them, you weren't there.
Yeah, I'm finding now that I've had the 60s. We've got people coming into the chat room, so that's kind of nice. All right, here we are. Let me talk about this free Wi-Fi scam. The next time you're at an airport looking for looking for a wireless hotspot, and you see something called free Wi-Fi or something like that, beware. You may end up being victimized by the latest hotspot scam hitting airports and coffee shops and like that across the country. You could end up being the target of a man-in-the-middle attack in which a hacker is able to steal information you send over the internet, including your usernames and passwords. And you could also have your files and identity stolen, end up with a spyware-infested PC, and have your PC turned into a spam-spewing zombie. But other than that, you're pretty safe. The attack could even leave your laptop open to hackers every time you turn it on by allowing anyone to connect to it without your knowledge. If you're a Windows Vista user, you're especially susceptible to this attack because of the difficulty in identifying it when you're using Vista. Here's how the attack works. You go to an airport or a coffee shop or some other hotspot, fire up your PC hoping to find a free hotspot. You see one. You connect. Bingo. You're owned. The problem is it's not really a hotspot. Instead, it's an ad hoc peer-to-peer network that somebody set up as a trap by using their laptop to do this. You can get software that sets yourself up, and then all of a sudden you're a wireless hotspot. You can certainly use the internet because the attacker lets you go through their PC to browse the web and all of that other stuff. But
because they want you to type in passwords so they can steal them.
Right, but because you're using that person's connection, all your traffic goes through their PC so they can see everything you do online, including all the usernames and passwords you enter for financial and other website. In addition, because you're directly connected to that attack PC on a peer-to-peer basis, if you set up your PC to allow file sharing, the attacker has complete run of your PC, can steal files and data, and plant malware on it. You don't actually see any of this stuff happening because it's happening in the background, and you'd be none the wiser. So when you get out there and you're gloating to your friends that you found a free hotspot somewhere, mm-hmm. And how cool is that?
Beware.
Be careful. Understand to whom you are actually connecting.
So there used to be, probably still are, problems at airports with snatch and grab where you gotta have your laptop scanned now. You can't have it manually checked, so you have to put it on the
keep your eyes on it.
Right. So it's usually a two-person team. Someone ahead of you stalls the line, and your laptop goes through the scanner, and their accomplice on the other side picks up your laptop and keeps going.
Right, yeah. Right. All right, our next caller is Bob from Greece, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Hello, good morning.
Hi there.
Bob Moore from Greece.
Hi, hey,
Bob.
Bobby.
I'm a friend for Dave, yeah.
How you doing,
Bob? Good. I got a question. My daughter's laptop, it started, it would run like, start shutting down, right? I think it's overheating. So what I did is, because she doesn't hear the fan blowing anymore. And when you first start up, you used to hear the fan really kick in.
Yep.
Well, it doesn't do that. So I opened it up and looked in the inside and noticed that the fan does turn on, but it's not spinning very fast at all. And I'm wondering, is the fan defective?
What we see a lot of times are the fans will get caked with dust and can't spin very well.
Yeah, or the sensor that kicks them on can also get clogged in that, too.
And some of the older models, the fan bearing can just wear out and need lubricated.
Yeah, sometimes it's just putting like a little graphite or that type of stuff, or usually, like Steve says, a little bit of just a dab of grease in that bearing, because it is so compact. If you put a little lift up the seal on the center of the fan, and you'll see a little area where you can put a little dab of grease or oil to lubricate that.
Well,
you have it apart, Bobby, is blow it out, too. If you got some canned air, blow it out, because we had another one. Matter of fact, I've been seeing a lot of these lately, e-machines, but I had an e-laptop come in, and literally both of the fans, there was two fans in this one, and they were both jammed with a lot of dust and dirt.
Oh, yeah.
So, I pulled one apart in the heat sink where all the radiating fins are.
Yeah.
We're just filled solid with dust.
Yeah.
Now, this looks fairly clean. Looks really fairly clean, but the motor doesn't seem to really wind up. And you can spin the motor by hand. I mean, it's not like it's, damaged.
Well, then it just may be a bad fan. That happens.
Yeah, it could be just a bad fan, too.
Yeah, are they multiple speed fans or just one?
No, just one speed.
Well, sometimes it depends. The thermal sensor can make the fan run as fast as it needs to cool it at the current temperature.
Yeah, but if you're replacing it with the same comparable fan,
it feeds power to the fan to change the speed.
Which will change
speed. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple.
See you this week, Bobby.
All right, you got Bobby there.
Well, no, the reason I'm quick talking here and interrupting is because we got a first coming to Rochester.
Talk about it very fast.
Yes, my nephew is coming in. It's the first husband and wife team from Iraq.
Our return comeback.
Coming back from Iraq. And so we're going to be out there, and Bobby's a close friend of the family. He's going to be there helping us celebrate them coming home safely.
All right, we're going to take a quick break now. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, the mighty Dan Cole, and me, Nick Francesco. It is 28 minutes after the hour, which means the great Glenn Lamberts will be in to bring us news, views, stuff you can use, weather, sports, all the most important things that there are. On the other side of the news, we'll come back and talk about an anti-spyware rival slamming Microsoft's Windows Defender and Vista. But until then, you're listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Jim Sanders on that list is a matter of grave importance.
Yes, it is, and we're all on the list. In fact, one, some might say we are the list. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And it is 32 minutes after the hour,
really,
and you're listening to Soundbites. Yes, he does. Well, he's a big Heroes fan as well.
Yep.
Interestingly, there's Microsoft's Vista and Windows Defender, which is its anti-spyware and stuff thing, has been blasted in a new report. However, you have to take that report with a grain of salt, since the company that put it out is a rival who puts out their own anti-spyware software. So you may hear a lot about this. It talks about Windows operating system limitations, cautions that Microsoft's default malware blocking application and antivirus programs may not fully protect them. They did a test where Defender didn't block 84% of the tested malware. It was a suite of Trojan horses, adware, keyloggers, system monitors, other unwanted programs. Shockingly enough, this antivirus company, anti-spyware company, Webroot Software, their product is called Spy Sweeper. Spy Sweeper blocked 100% of the threats. While I think Spy Sweeper is a terrific product, I have to say I'm always a little leery of a test that shows to be a product is 100% effective, and that test was sponsored by the people who own the product.
Yeah, not some impartial company doing it.
So you may hear about this, but unless they tell you specifically that it was done by Webroot Software, who creates the program that passed all the tests, you may not realize that this is one that you really should just take with a grain of salt. All right, we're back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece. Welcome, Mark. What's your question?
Hi, gentlemen. I was calling about the links, and I didn't want to hang up on you and be rude because I hate when people do that.
That's okay.
So that was the only thing. I just didn't want to hang up on you.
What was the deal with the website links?
Well, it was about the podcast, about the archive.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
like I said, I'll get it up as soon as I can. It looks like now I have to get another hard drive somewhere, so I'm going to see if I can scrounge, but we'll probably just end up getting a hard drive for it. So
great. Yeah, I just didn't want to hang up on you guys.
I appreciate
thank
that.
You.
That's very polite.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Mark.
Bye.
That's always appreciated. Our next caller is Bob from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I have a laptop that's running Windows XP Service Pack 2, and it's connected to the Frontier DSL SpeedStream modem.
Mm-hmm.
I'm running Zone Alarm Pro firewall, and I also have Norton antivirus on it. Now, the question is, if I was to place a wired Linksys cable / DSL router in between my PC and the DSL SpeedStream modem, what additional security, if any, would this provide that I don't already have in place now?
Depends on which model you get.
Yeah.
Most of them give you something called NAT, Network Address Translation. So you have a private IP behind the firewall. So it's a level of anonymity against the internet. So if anyone tries to break into your IP address, it stops at the router.
Is it NAT or NAT?
NAT, N-A-T, Network Address Translation.
All right, and if it doesn't have that, then...
Well, virtually all the routers have that, because that's also the way you share an internet connection from a single address you get from your provider with multiple computers.
Okay. It would be very hard to buy a router without that.
Yes, nowadays, yeah.
The one thing I found out this week with the wireless routers, we sell Linksys brand wireless routers. They're $70.
Yep.
People keep saying, "Well, I can buy this one for $40." Well, the $40 routers only have the WEP encryption on them, which can be broken in 5 minutes. The $70 routers have the WPA2 encryption that can't be broken in a million years.
Right. So the question is, how safe do you want to be?
Yeah.
Well, now if I put that in place, that's going to prevent what type of an attack?
Inbound traffic won't be able to find your computer anymore because it's now a different address.
Okay, and I ran that scenario by the folks at Frontier, and they told me don't bother with buying the Linksys router for $40 or whatever. He said because on their 6520 SpeedStream modems. He said, go to your DOS commit prompt. I go, okay. He goes, type in ipconfig. So I type in ipconfig. I get one IP address. He says, okay, now go out to whatismyip.com. I says, okay. So I go out there. He says, see that IP address? I go, yeah. He goes, it's different. He says, that's the IP address that people see.
The DSL router is providing some of that address translation itself, but you're only getting one computer. If you buy a network router, you can run multiple computers.
I only run one PC. That's just
then you don't need any of that stuff. You're good.
Oh, yeah, no, it's just one PC, just mine. Nobody else in the house has a PC.
Right. If you've got the main reason for a router is to provide that kind of security if you're not getting it from your network connection, which, of course, you are. And secondly, if you've got multiple machines that you want to share one connection with. So you don't need any of that, so you're good to go.
Oh, okay, so don't bother spending money on a Linksys router.
You don't need it.
Beautiful. Thank you very much.
Sure, Bob. Thank you. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dan Cole, me, Nick Francesco, and you. When we come back, we'll talk about what Pope Benedict thinks about violent video games. I think you already know. It is 38 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Beth and Chet.
There's been oral contradiction.
Hey. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. Yes.
Rush.
What?
Rush.
Yep, there you go. I think we've got people in the chats now are hustling to decide to answer the name that tune kind of thing.
Yeah.
To be the first to name the tune, we'll see what happens with that. Pope Benedict XVI has joined the European critics to denounce violent video games, which the European Union is debating whether to ban. In his message to the Catholic Church's 41st World Communion Day, the Pope said any trend to produce programs and products, including animated films and video games, which in the name of entertainment exalt violence and portray antisocial behavior or the trivialization of human sexuality, is a perversion, all the more repulsive when these programs are directed at children and adolescents. Pope Benedict released the message at the European Union debate on whether to outlaw violent video games sold to children. Germany, which is serving a six-month rotating term as the EU president, has outlawed violent video games and is a leader among supporters of an EU-wide ban. So we may be finding that very soon now, European Union is banning video games, violent video games.
Yeah, eh?
Well, then that goes back to how do you define violent, which they tried. I remember, 10 years ago now, there was an internet provider in town that filtered content before it got to your house. So they were filtering at their end.
Mm-hmm.
And that was all great until they filtered wrestling and you didn't like that and switched away.
Yeah.
No, it was wrestling violent or was wrestling a drama? Is wrestling scripted?
Really.
Yeah. Yeah, scripted is still one of my favorite lines. I watch. I have the Thin Man movies from the 20s and 30s and 40s. And one of my favorite lines is Nick and Nora are walking away and they're investigating a murder at a boxing ring. And the promoter of the fight says, you should come and see the fights tonight. They're going to be great. And Nick says, why? Did you read the script?
No. Good one.
All right. Our next caller is Jeff from Canandaigua, New York. Welcome, Jeff. What's your question?
Hi. I'm having trouble getting my remote computers to connect to my main desktop at home. I have an internal network. It was working okay till a couple of weeks ago, and I get an error message or I get a message that I don't have permission to access that computer. And I've tried turning on and off file sharing, and I've tried adjusting. I have a McAfee firewall and all that stuff. I tried shutting off the firewalls. I've tried doing all that stuff, and I even made a whole new network with a new name. And it seems to be some – I can get out from the from the desktop to the laptops, and I can see files there, but I can't get from the laptop into the desktop, and that's where all the printers are, so I can't.
Well, have you tried
access any of my printers?
Have you tried changing the permissions? If you're getting a permission error, you probably have to change the permissions to allow more users access to it.
I tried enabling and disabling and re-enabling sharing on it.
No, you actually have to go into the sharing preferences and change the permissions to allow a user to access that resource.
Okay.
Now, the thing that is, you've got one computer. How many laptops that you're trying to connect through the wireless?
Well, I have, at various times, up to four wireless computers in there.
That are trying to all access the one that's hardwired?
Usually there's only one.
Yeah, okay. And you said you changed the workgroup name?
I changed the workgroup name. Now I have two workgroups on there, and I don't know how to get the other one off. But
Windows.
Well, you have to shut down all the computers, wait an hour until they forget about the second workgroup name, and then turn them back on.
As long as you know the one that you're working with. Now, and these are all running what, XP Pro or XP Home?
XP Home.
Yes, it's usually a login problem with the username and password. You're logging into the remote computer as. That username doesn't have permission to access the resource you're trying to get to. So you have to go into the properties of that folder, printer, whatever, and change the permission
little
level.
Little checkboxes.
Yeah. Full control, I think, is what you want to find for a printer, at least. And then you can change the read-write permission for folders, depending on what username they're logging in as.
Okay. How do I find that? I find that on the... If I go into, like, properties on the... thing I want to share.
Yeah,
right. There should be a sharing and security tab that will list what the permissions are for that resource.
It'll show all the user, the folks, and you've got to, if you click on that one and check the properties of that, you'll see whether all the boxes are checked to whether they can access, say, like the printer and everything else. Isn't that something, you know, it's not easy to talk, you know, walk people through over a radio show or, you know, it's something.
I'm putting a link up for changing permissions.
Yeah.
The easiest thing to do is make sure that all the computers have the same username and password, then you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
The way I solved it is I actually created a printing user and then gave that user permission. And then when I connect to the printer, it asks for username and password. I give it that username and password. It connects to that machine with that username and password, and now it can print.
Okay.
So you might want to give that a try. But we really kind of have to move along, Jeff.
Check the link list. It'll be up in a moment or two.
Yep. Our next caller is Steve from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's your question?
I had Computer Associates firewall through Roadrunner.
Yeah.
And something happened where it kept on trying to install the firewall.
Yeah.
So I sent them an email. They sent back an email. Well, a couple days later, I came home. My computer was on, and I could have sworn it turned it off. Can they actually access your computer, turn it on, and fix it? Because then they sent me an email saying we've solved the problem, yet the firewall's not there, though.
Well, there's a couple of things. Many machines have what's called a wake on LAN set up in the BIOS. Mm-hmm. If that's on and you get the right signal through your LAN connection, your network connection, it will turn the machine on.
Well, that will wake it from sleep. Can they actually turn it on if it's powered off?
Well, it depends on the BIOS.
Yeah.
And it also depends on how it's plugged in, too. I mean, if it's plugged into some type of switch, you know, you literally physically have to turn it on.
Right, but there is a command you can send that will turn a machine on. So if your BIOS has wake on LAN set, then yes, it is certainly a possibility.
Okay, because I'm concerned. Now I'm trying to install this, you know, said if you're having problems with a firewall, go to our website and install it. Every time I try to go in and install it, it says I don't have,
well, tell you what,
I don't have access to it now.
Tell you what, don't bother with theirs. Go to our website, to soundbites.org, mm-hmm. Go to Security Tango, and try Zone Alarm. It's a freebie, and it works.
Isn't the firewall based on Zone Alarm from Computer Associates?
No, Computer Associates is a whole other company.
Yep.
Is it? All right.
So, try the Zone Alarm one. I think you might be happier with that. Gives you a little bit better control.
Yep. All right, we have to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
No, Rob Linton.
Oh, sorry, Dan. It gets to be a habit, and I apologize. Rob Linton is still hiding under his bed crying like a
six-year-old. I don't know whether to be upset or offended.
I would be both if I were you, and I apologize. It's Dan Cole, ladies and gentlemen, the great Dan Cole, the mighty Dan Cole on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
February 4th, Matthews.
But I think it'll be much
easier. Still 8 on Wham.
You guys are laughing your heads off, so I figured this would be more than appropriate coming back.
That is exactly
especially
the right music.
Especially after Bob Matthews
comment.
That is
exactly the right music. Welcome back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm wondering what's going on in there when I'm not paying attention.
Yes. Now, does this song have a real name, or has it always been the Benny Hill theme?
That's got to be its name, Benny Hill theme.
It's 55 minutes after the hour. All right, kids, sit back. Put on your footy jammies, grab your hot cocoa and your teddy bear, gather in a semicircle around the rocking chair, because if we can slap them awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave?
Hello.
Uncle Dave?
No, he did bring him
in. I'm psyching you out this time.
There you go. Go ahead.
Oh.
We only got a couple minutes.
Yeah. All right. I think I have both you guys chime in on this one because it's
Well,
it's something we were talking about when we get here early, folks. You know, we kind of review kind of stuff that we want to talk about and everything else.
Show prep. Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Amazing. Scary, almost. But we were talking about, you know, we've been hearing a lot of folks in the forums and everything else complaining and saying, oh, all you guys do is bash Microsoft. And constantly, the answer to everything is dance a tango. Well, folks. Yeah, some of you folks in the forums, yes, you're up to date on stuff. And you stay, you know, reading all these articles. But there are literally thousands of other folks out there that aren't as technical or, you know, up on things as the rest of us. And that's why we just try to warn people of the various updates or other flaws or potential problems. Because other folks have other things to do, like run a business or try to do other stuff. They don't have time to stay up on the latest and greatest. The number of folks, and I'm sure you run into this too, Steve, that you go to and you ask them, well, when do you update your machine? I got to update it. They don't have a clue.
Or the little auto update pops up and they hit cancel because they don't know what it means.
Yeah, right. They're afraid to do anything. They're not like some of the other folks in the forum that would get in there and open up cases.
See, there's two sides of the people. Some people will click on any button that pops up, and some people are afraid to click on any button that pops up.
Right. And you know, people are always accusing me of bashing Microsoft. I was the first guy on the air to say, I like XP. Yeah. I liked it. I liked it a lot. So far, what I see of Vista, I like, but, you know, it's eye candy. There's no real difference from it and XP, so I still like it. We don't bash Microsoft all the time. Sometimes we do, but part of the point is they're so huge and they have so much money and they have so many people. They should be perfect. Well, that's what I expect of them. I want them to be perfect. Everybody who uses a Mac thinks Macintoshes are perfect, and so they never say bad things about them.
Exactly.
I think Microsoft should be perfect, and I want to help them get there. I'm sorry, but that's how I feel about it.
We're just trying to educate folks, and to the response of, you know, well, yeah, their answer is just run the Tango, run the Tango. Well, that's
why Nick wrote the Tango, because that is the answer to so many questions.
Yeah. Many of the questions we get, you know, we answer the questions people ask. And that's kind of what we have to do. There's nothing we can do except answer the questions we're asked.
Yeah.
And if the answer is try the Tango, how many of you have done troubleshooting? Often that's where you start. You do something like that and see what happens. 99% of the time, you're done. The other 1% of the time, you've got more work to do. But certainly, if you've ever done any troubleshooting, you know that's how you start.
And this is radio. We can't stay on there and walk them through every step.
Right.
It's got to be quick things that we can confidently.
All right. It's time for us to give Uncle Dave his shot, a little tranquilizer to the neck, and we're going to take a quick break. Glenn Lamberts is back in with the news, the weather, the sports, the commentary, all the most important things that you listen to Wham all day for. When we come back on the other side of the news, it'll be Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dan Cole, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you. We'll talk about Vista upgrading and things like that when we come back on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Soundbites next. I'm Glenn Lamberts on Rochester's news leader, News Radio 1180. WHAM.
Watt News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000 Watt 1180 WHAM.
Welcome to the second hour of Soundbites, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I look good in a skirt, don't I?
Yes, you do. Save the cheerleader, save the show.
Where's your pom-poms?
I left him at home. I'm sorry.
That's all right. It's 7 minutes after the hour. You are, of course, listening to Soundbites. Now, every week on Soundbites, we do a poll. Last week's poll was all about Apple's 802.11n download charge. Apple has 802.11 inbuilt into some of their systems, their new MacBook Pros in particular. Unfortunately, they didn't give the software to run it, mainly because at the time the 802.11n standard had not been formalized.
Didn't I read that draft 2 was just ratified this week?
Just this last week. Yeah. And that's, well, actually last week, and that's where this download came from. So now they have to give it to people. But of course, the problem is they've already realized all the income from it, so they can't give it away for free. They have to charge it. It's kind of silly, but they have to do it. So the question was, how do you feel about it? 71% of you predictably said, hey, Apple people, my upgrade's free. 18% said it's sad but reasonable. And 11% of the sheep said whatever Apple does is okay by me. This week's poll is about software compatibility under Vista. The deal here is that a lot of people are eagerly awaiting Vista, But there are concerns over compatibility, in addition to bugs and security, that are keeping a lot of IT professionals from jumping into it too soon. Only 68% of IT pros reported they'd be upgrading to Vista in 2007, the whole year, although very few had made immediate plans. Of those who had expressed their intention to shift to the new operating system, 58% said they'd be waiting 6 months to a year after the launch to do so, while 10% plan to roll out the upgrade in the next 6 months. Concerns over software compatibility were expressed by 38% of the tech professionals, followed by hardware compatibility concerns, a desire, which was 17%, a desire to wait for bugs to work themselves out, 7%, and security concerns, 6%. Only 7% of those surveyed felt completely comfortable with Microsoft's client security. At RIT, I'm the systems administrator for the E. Philip Saunders College of Business at the Rochester Institute of Technology, and we are evaluating Vista. In fact, I brought a system with a Vista on it now. We've got a lot of specialized software that simply doesn't work yet. We can't roll it out to our labs because a lot of the specialized stuff we use has not come out with a Vista-compatible version yet. There's also a thing called user access control that a lot of people are concerned about. We're already doing that through Active Directory, so I don't care. But a lot of people seem to be concerned about software compatibility under Vista. So that's this week's poll. The question is, I worry about software compatibility under Vista. Your choices are only at work, only at home, everywhere. Not enough to stop me. Never, I only run Microsoft software. I'll let somebody else be the pioneer. And, of course, the return of our two favorite choices, the Macintosh and the Linux. So far, on the Soundbites homepage, we have 97 people who have voted in the poll, and the overwhelming choice is I'll let somebody else be the pioneer, followed by the Linux. When you're done putting in your poll choice, I know you people, a simple choice doesn't do it for you, so I've provided an opinion place. Click on Give Us Your Opinion in the little yellow box underneath it. That will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
Bad guy?
Bad guy?
Yes, like Bina.
What's that?
Bina.
Villain?
Bina.
Villain.
Villain.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Where you can put in your post. And a lot of people apparently are not capable of hearing the show except through a podcast because they're jonesing for it, and they're leaving a message. Again, let me repeat that as soon as we fix the machine, we will have the podcast back up.
You've just had another request on the chat form.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they want a picture of Dan.
We need a picture of Dan.
They want Dan.
Absolutely. We'll work on that. We'll absolutely work on that. The Mighty Dan Cole fan club needs photos. We'll deal with that very shortly.
About time I had a fan club.
You deserve a fan club, mister. I'm telling you that right now. Dan and I spend every morning together on the Wham Morning News, and he's the one who keeps me sounding good on the air. He's actually the brains of the outfit. I'm just the voice.
Yeah, Lauren, who's in the chat room, has requested a picture of Dan.
There we go. We'll see what we can do about that. As long as you're at the Ask Nick website, look around. Lots of neat stuff. The weekly newsletter and all of that other stuff is in there, and that's kind of fun. Then come back and join us in the Soundbites forums where the coolest people on earth hang out. And vote in the polls. But we'll have to go back to the phones now. Our next caller is Gary from Lockport, New York. Welcome, Gary. What's your question?
Yes, good morning, guys. I'm running Tiger. It's about a year old. I have an annoying problem that I've learned to live with. It's when I first make my first initial dial-up connection, I'll get a connection, and it'll last a minute, 4 seconds, and I'll get disconnected. The second time, I have no problem, and throughout the day, as long as the computer's on, I have no problem. But it's always the first connection that I attempt to make will disconnect me at 1 minute, 4 seconds.
What model brand of modem are you using?
Whatever the machine came with. It's about a year and a half old.
Mm. That should be...
Well, that's about the time Apple stopped including modems in their computers.
Great.
Figuring most people have broadband, so they remove the modem, lower the price. You can buy an external modem if you want one. If you go into your network preferences under modem...
Okay.
Make sure that the correct modem type is selected, the modem driver, basically. And sometimes there's issues with the protocols. So it may be defaulting to the, what's the new, the V.94?
Yeah.
Anyone remember the old modem specifications?
Yeah, V.90. V.94.
92. There was a 90, a 30, you know, then there was 34. Right. We jumped from 34 to 90 for some reason. You may have to back down from the 94 to the 92 to the 90 to make your modem talk better with the modem at the other end.
Why would it always work the second time?
Because you're not connecting to the same modem anymore, possibly. When you dial back again, you're getting another modem in the bank at the other end.
Oh, okay.
That was that used to be a trick. If you had two phone lines, you dial your ISP on your voice line, and that makes that modem busy. So then when you dial on your computer, it would jump to the next modem in the bank.
Oh, right. Okay. What the other thing is, when you connect, do you connect the minute you turn your machine on?
No, sometimes the machine will be on a little bit. Sometimes we turn the machine on, wait till we get the screen, then connect after that.
All right. Okay. That's all in.
All right.
All right. Thanks.
Well, that is one of the issues with macOS 10 is being Unix based. It assumes you're connected to a network almost. And so the minute you turn it on, it tries to get an IP address. And if you have your modem set to auto dial, it will try to dial your modem if it doesn't see a network address.
Right.
So that's been an issue for a few years now with OS X not being on a network. It tries to dial a modem all the time. So then you have to turn off auto dial. So when you want to get on the internet, you have to make it dial. So we get people complaining both ways. You know, it doesn't dial when I want it to, but it dials all the time.
Right.
Well, pick one.
All right. Our next caller.
Well, hang on a second.
Oh,
pop your head up, Dan. Little higher. Here we go. All right. Let me see if I can get a picture up. We're a long way away from Dan, but...
Our next caller is Anthony from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Anthony. What's your question?
Well, I wanted to find... We had a caller on earlier. Talked about the cache. You talked about cleaning the cache out.
Right.
How do you do that?
Cleaning the cache in the browser is actually pretty simple. Yeah, it depends on which browser you're using as to exactly how you get to it. But in the preferences section, usually it's under Firefox, for example, it's Edit Preferences. It brings up a series of tabs. One tab is Privacy. Under there, you can click the Cache tab, and there's a button that says Clear Cache Now. Same thing with cookies. You can clear the cookies now, the download history, the password. Saved forms, the history, everything you have, you can change that pretty easily, and it's similar on Internet Explorer, the various versions of Internet Explorer. So there is a button in the settings to actually delete your cache,
and that's a good thing, especially with Internet Explorer, because a lot of viruses and spyware can hide in your cache and sneak back into the computer.
All right, so if I go Internet Explorer,
right.
Well,
we don't really do that on the air because we've got other people to talk to, but that's how you do it. Under Internet Explorer, you'll be able to find a whole bunch of settings, and somewhere in the privacy section, that's where that'll be. Depending on which version of Internet Explorer you use, they keep changing where things are.
Oh, okay.
Okie doke.
All right, thanks,
Anthony. Our next caller is Jim from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
This is week two of laptop hard drive problems. I was able to get I got an IBM laptop running 2K,
mm-hmm.
and I was able to get the current hard drive completely copied into the new hard drive,
mm-hmm.
and I double-checked it by putting the new hard drive onto my tower and was able to read the whole thing, and it's all there.
Mm-hmm.
I take out my hard drive out of my laptop, slap a new one in, starts to boot up, and it says I can't see the hard drive. So am I missing something?
Hold on.
Yeah, I mean, did you ghost this?
Yes. Ghost copy, yeah.
No, did you use the ghost program to ghost one hard drive to the other?
Yes, but if I use ghost copy, not ghost backup.
All right.
That should be fine.
So, and it's, in other words, the two hard drives were in a laptop.
Yes.
And you put them on your other machine and ghost them.
Right.
And you're trying to now boot it, put the new one back into the laptop and trying to boot?
Right.
And it's saying it's not formatted?
No, it's just saying it doesn't see the hard drive.
There is no hard drive.
There is no hard drive.
I'm thinking that the problem is the controller, not the drive itself.
Can you get into the BIOS and see if it sees the hard drive at all? Because sometimes they don't. Most manufacturers just set it to auto.
Yeah, this might be an older BIOS where you have to set the cylinders, heads, and sectors.
Yeah, or tell it to search for it and find it.
Okay. That's a good idea.
Check in there.
I will do.
All right.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Yeah, because like Steve and I run into from time to time, we just take it for granted that they're set automatically.
Yeah.
Some of them aren't.
You remember cylinders, head, and sectors?
Yep.
That was every
LBA.
Other question. That was every other question. I bought a new hard drive. How do I make it work? You got to look out for the cylinders, head, and sectors.
Yep. Right.
All right, we are going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Dan Cole, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you. We'll talk about Apple plugging their first month of Apple Bugs Hole and a couple of other things. It's 19 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
News Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Sound Bites.
And Apple used this song for an iTunes commercial, so we know it.
Yeah, right. All right, speaking of Apple, Apple has shipped a high-priority update for the QuickTime Media Player to correct a flaw exposed during the controversial Month of Apple Bugs project. The QuickTime patch comes 23 days after the first Month of Apple Bugs advisory was released, with proof of concept exploits for the issue, which could allow code execution attacks. Apple described the vulnerability as a buffer overflow. How many times do we have to hear that term? In the way QuickTime handles RTSP URLs. Apple did not credit the Month of Apple Bug flaw finders in its advisory, but mentioned that a QTL file that triggers the flaw was published on the Month of Apple Bugs website. Since the launch of that project on January 1st, there have been daily releases affecting Mac OS X users. The project is slated to end on January 31st. I got to say, if Apple took 23 days to bring out their first fix, that's not so good. And what about the other, at this point, 27 of them? So Apple's got a little work to do to catch up on that sort of thing. They're still beating some of Microsoft's records, not anywhere close to the Linux records, but we'll figure that out at some point. I do before we get back to the phones, I do want to announce my wife found these online, and I have to mention them.
You better then, or you're going to be a doo-doo-doo.
Exactly. IBM Research has announced a breakthrough in the way to keep smaller, faster, cheaper race in computer chips going. They've perfected a technique for swapping the traditional insulation in transistors with a new material. So far, it's been glassy silicon oxide. That's been the material of choice for insulation in transistors for 40 years. Every microchip has millions upon millions of transistors, which are, of course, the on-off switches at the heart of computers. They've been working on a replacement for silicon dioxide for about a decade. And the reason is that as transistors shrink, the silicon dioxide layers become too thin to reduce any further without losing insulative properties. But they figured out a way to use it, the oxide of an element known as hafnium. Hafnium oxide.
What about holium?
I believe he was one of the hobbits.
Yeah.
To build transistors with a potential future size reduction. So we should see something about that coming along. In addition,
they're going down to 45 nanometers. It was the 90 nanometers was the big thing a couple of months ago, and companies were saying, we don't know if we can do that or not. Now they're already talking about 45 nanometers.
Yeah. There's even a new chip developed by Caltech and UCLA that shows a potential for making integrated circuits at an even smaller size. It's still at least a decade away of mass production, but they have actually made the world's densest memory circuit, one that's about 100 times denser than anything we have today, and it's as small as a human's white blood cell.
Whoa.
It's 160 kbits of capacity, which kind of beats the previous generation, which we're using, which has 64 bits. It's 160,000 bits of capacity, which is 100 billion bits per square centimeter. It's about 100 times more tightly packed than current memory circuits. Now, you won't see this for at least a decade, but it should spur even smaller and smaller and smaller devices. So I want to thank my favorite wife, Elaine, for making sure that I got hold of those.
Yeah.
Hafnium is a lustrous silver-gray tetravalent transitional metal.
Yes, it is.
And it's
well,
used,
who didn't know that?
Who didn't
yeah,
know that?
Really.
It's used in light bulb filaments.
Yep.
What?
Yeah, and so, now it'll be used in memory cells the size of a human white blood cell.
Yep.
Our next caller is Tom from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Tom. What's your question?
Yes, I was going to take my computer in this week to have some work done on it. One of the things being a larger hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to back up some files. I'm running Windows XP Home.
Mm-hmm.
Don't see the backup under System Tools.
Right.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay.
Well, backup wasn't bad. Restore didn't work.
Yeah, restore. Backup actually worked pretty well. It was restore that never
Here's
worked.
A simple one to do, though, Tom.
Okay.
Now, do you have a DVD burner in that machine?
Yes, I do.
All right, here's what you want to do. In Windows, whether it's XP Home, Vista, or, you know, I mean XP Home, Professional, or Media, if you go into the Files and Settings Transfer program, and tell it to, you know, it'll first ask you, well, is this the new machine or the old machine? You say, it's the old machine. And it will do a backup. And you can create a folder called temp. Create a folder called temp first. And then tell it to back it up to the temp folder. What it's going to do is take all your documents, all your settings, all your pictures, your desktop, everything else that's
your
important
email.
To you, your email and all that, and pack it up into one file. Now, what you do, once it's done doing that, is you open up your burning software, and you're probably going to need a DVD because it's a big file. You burn that file to DVD.
Okay.
Now you've got everything that is crucial to that machine. If something happens, at least all your documents and everything else is backed up for you, along with your desktop and settings.
Very good.
And because this is so important, you want to do it at least twice.
Okay.
Just to make sure one of them is good.
But it's a good way of making sure that you get everything. And it's a simple way to do it that I can, you know, recommend for folks to
Well, now, that doesn't work if you haven't put things in My Documents, right? Because it doesn't search your hard drive. It only does the My Documents folder for documents.
No, I think it'll find the other stuff, too. Yeah, as long as it looks for extensions.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so give that a try.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next caller... Probably it would be Rick from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Rick. What's your question?
How you doing? Great show, guys.
Thanks.
I have to have iTunes on my computer for the iPod. My question is, I want Media Player to be my default versus QuickTime. Now, I went in and unchecked all the files like they say you should do, file, whatever you call it, file formats, file.
Yep.
Okay. But it doesn't allow me to uncheck, I think, anything that opens in Apple or opens in QuickTime.
Well, there are some specific file types that Windows Media Player cannot play. QuickTime movie files, .mov, and protected AAC files, what are they, .m4p.
M4p, okay. Yeah.
Right.
But it just seems like it's opening more than... You know what I mean?
Well, it's sort of the trouble with any media program you install. It wants to run all of your media.
Right.
The other way to do it is to pick a file on your desktop, you know, an MP3 or a WMA, and you can change the file association type. If you got to remember how to do it now. Left click on the file, and then shift right click. There will be an open with command.
Correct.
And
okay,
in that open with, you can pick your Windows Media Player or whatever other program you want to run that file. And then there's an always open with button.
Okay.
So then every time you click that type of file, it will open with that program you selected. And there's actually a similar function inside the Macintosh for the same sort of thing. If you want to change the default file format or default program that opens a type of file format, like a JPEG or a TIFF that can be opened in many different programs, it's the same sort of thing.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you. Our next caller is Bernie from Hopewell. Where's Hopewell?
A little bit south and east of you, folks.
Oh.
I've been through Hopewell, the Hopewell Water Tower on 5 and 20.
Yes, sir.
There you go. All right. What's your question, Bernie?
Well, it's in relation to something a gentleman called about.
But wait a minute. Hold on. Isn't everything in New York at some point on 5 and 20?
Yeah.
You can drive all over New York State, lost for 10 hours, and suddenly you're on 5 and 20.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Bernie.
It's the heart of New York.
Yeah. Before the thruway went in, that was 5 and 20. It was the main road.
Yep.
I've got an HP desktop that I recently bought an external hard drive for.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm trying to do is, like, copy my C drive to the external hard drive.
Okay.
And I keep having troubles with that. And the gentleman called earlier and talked about ghost copy.
Right.
Yeah, you won't be able to copy your entire C drive because you can't copy the operating system because files are in use.
Right. That's the error I'm getting when
right.
I try to copy
so it. So a program like Ghost, which lets you boot a CD, you can then copy the hard drive to another hard drive.
Yeah. Or do like I told the other caller. The key thing is, you know, if a machine crashes on you, you know, losing all those documents, the emails, and the settings and all that type of stuff, you know, it's usually pretty devastating.
Right.
So what you do is, again, within Windows XP is that file and transfer setting program.
Where is that located?
If you go into, Start Programs, Accessories, under System Tools, it's called Files and Settings Transfer. Okay. And you tell it it's the old machine, it'll create that folder or file. Within that folder, you create a folder called temp.
Uh-huh.
And underneath there will be another, it gives it a US, I think it's something, generic name. And then within that is the actual temp, compressed files.
Okay.
You take that folder and then copy that out to your external hard drive. Most of your key stuff then is protected.
Okay.
Yeah, that's sort of the debate between fast backup and fast restore. A fast backup is just back up your files.
Right.
Then if you need to restore your entire computer, you got to load the operating system, load your applications, load all the patches, then put your files back.
Right.
Right. Well, that's
the other way, the other way is to back up the entire hard drive, which may take a little longer to do a backup,
right.
But it's a lot faster restore if your main computer crashes.
I had an error using the Microsoft backup program.
Yeah, don't use that.
No. Yeah.
Well, do you have one that you recommend?
Well, if you're going to back up an entire hard drive, it's Ghost.
Which is a commercial program.
Right. Otherwise, as Dave said, just the settings wizard would be the thing to use to back up everything that you normally use that special folder.
We've talked about backup programs in the past, and we have a few links on our website. Backup My PC is nice. Retrospect is nice. If you want to schedule a backup so that every day at 5 o'clock it backs up your changed files, then you need some sort of a backup program.
What's the company behind Ghost?
Norton.
Norton, okay.
Yep.
Norton Ghost. Okay, I've heard of it before. I've just never used it. Okay.
There
the
you go.
I wanted to do the whole hard drive was because I've got applications that I don't have a CD for to load them if I had to load them new.
Ah.
Yeah. Well, with Ghost, you can create an image. And with that, you could probably, again, you know, the image is smaller.
Well, it's still an image of everything on your hard drive,
yeah.
So the best way is to back up to another hard drive.
Yeah.
Right. We do that at work a lot. We back up people's whole machines.
Right.
And we do it to the network. We use terabytes of storage, but we have backups of everybody's machines.
Right. Okay. Well,
there you go.
Give me a direction to go in. Thank you.
All right. Thanks.
Bye.
We are going to take a quick break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, the mighty Dan Cole, and me, Nick Francesco. All of you at 35 minutes after the hour at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And at 39 minutes after the hour, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites.
Van Halen was going to get inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and they weren't sure whether David Lee Roth or Sammy Hagar would show up.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see what happens when they have the actual ceremony.
Yeah.
All right, the Storm Trojan horse that began spreading on Friday has attacked at least 1.6 million PCs in essentially 48 hours. It's twice as long as it would have taken Jack Bauer to do it, but at least it did it. In addition, it appears that Windows Vista is vulnerable to the attack. Originally dubbed the Storm Worm because one of the subject heads used by the email touted Europe's recent severe weather. The Trojan's author is now spreading it using subjects such as lovebirds, touched by love, and things like that. The Trojan piggybacks onto the spam as an executable file with names ranging from postcard.exe to flash postcard.exe. More changes in the original wave are occurring as the attack mutates. The first several blasts of the Trojan came with current events subject headers, including one claiming to include the video of a Chinese missile attack or proof that Saddam Hussein is alive
and bore attached file names such as video.exe. It has evolved, and its semantic alone has received 1.6 million detection reports from its sensor system. The most recent variants include rootkit cloaking, so it's hidden from security software. So your security software can't even detect it, although the rootkit code seems to be flawed in some of the variations. All the files, all the registry keys, all the ports disappear.
If you stop the
rootkit running, they all reappear again.
That's half the problem with viruses. They aren't written very well.
Well, that's the good part for us. But 1.6 million PCs in a very short time is certainly nothing to sneeze at. So make sure you're all up to date. We keep saying it. Make sure you're all up to date. Our next caller is Lori from Shortsville, New York. Welcome, Lori. What's your question?
Hi, yes. Sometimes when I close out of a website to go back to my desktop, my computer locks up, and I have to. The only way to get out of it is to turn it off and turn it back on. I was wondering if you had any suggestions.
Well, you might want. You're running Windows XP?
No, Windows 98, second edition.
All right, what you might want to do.
Well, first, how long have you waited to see if the computer comes back?
Not very long. Probably.
Because sometimes it may not be locked up. It may just be trying to do something.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, wait a minute and see what happens.
Yeah, or you might want to go into the control panel and under power options, make sure all those are set to never.
Okay.
Because Windows 98, well, most of Windows programs don't like the hard drive going to sleep on it.
Right,
and quite
okay.
often, you know, they're set to, after 20 minutes or so, to spin down the hard drive. And it doesn't like that. So go into the control panel under power options and make sure all those features are turned to never.
Okay.
Also, it's possible that the websites that you're on have popped up a dialog box that you need to answer, but it's behind the main page of the web server of the website, and so you can't see it because it's behind the browser window. Often, hitting Alt-Tab will show you multiple windows open, and one of them may well be that dialog box.
Okay.
So it may just be waiting for something to happen before it comes back.
Okay.
Give it a shot.
All right, thank you.
Sure. All righty, have a good one.
And then, of course, the other problem is that Windows 98 is so old that a lot of websites just don't work well with the browsers for 98.
Well, there's nothing much you can do about that anymore.
Does Firefox still support 98?
Probably.
Yeah.
But not, I'm sure a lot of the latest plugins and things like that, I mean, will flash. You know, Flash 9 won't work on 98, I know. So, 98 is,
it died as of June last year.
Well, see, a lot of people, we've been hearing this a lot ourselves, too. We just want to keep an old machine for getting on the internet. Well, that's usually what you can't do, because old machines don't work well on the internet.
The Flash player won't work correctly.
You have to find old versions of plugins, and then websites are always assuming the latest, fanciest.
Yeah, and they won't display correctly.
Right.
So,
all right, our next caller is George from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, George. What's your question?
I heard you talking about Ghost as a backup program.
Mm-hmm.
I bought Acronis True Image. Is that going to be any good?
Yeah. Oh, there's a lot of them out there. I mean, we just happened to think of that one because it's so well known.
And it's also how loosely you define backup. Because technically, Ghost is a duplication program. It makes an exact duplicate of your hard drive.
Well, I was
which is a backup, but it's not its primary purpose.
I was told that Acronis True Image does exactly that.
It's exactly what it does. And the main use for programs like that is to, as our one caller said, he doesn't have a lot of the original CDs, which is a little suspicious in and of itself, but we won't go there. And that way you back up your entire machine. The problem is, if you put that on a new machine and you have, for example, XP or eventually Vista as your operating system, it may simply refuse to run because it thinks you've changed the machine and now you have to re-register the software. Microsoft may make you pay for that.
And a lot of times we use it for putting a new hard drive into an existing machine and copying all the stuff over. You want an exact copy of all your
and
stuff.
And that's different. It should work fine there because it's all the same hardware.
Because like right now I've been seeing, and I don't know if you've been seeing it, Steve, I've been seeing a heck of a lot of E machines. either bad motherboards or bad hard drives.
Right. Well, it's some of that goes back to, you know, the cheap computers, the E-Machine, even, you know, the 299 Dells, you know, the really cheap machines. They're made with lower quality components.
They're throwaways.
Right, they're going to fail. If anything breaks, you throw it away, buy a new one, because it costs less
than fixing it. You guys are going to love this. We had a machine come in, and the person wanted to, it was a brand new Dell, and wanted to add, because they wanted some other stuff added, a better graphics card and that type of stuff.
Right.
Because he was getting ready to go to Vista.
Yeah.
Now, they sold him a brand new machine. Okay?
Yeah.
It came with, you ready? And it says, they even gave him the certificate.
Vista ready.
Vista ready. You ready? 128 megs of memory.
Shared video memory?
Shared video.
So 128 of your 128 is shared.
80 gig hard drive. Now they say it's Vista ready because the processor will handle it.
Yeah, you got to be very careful of that stuff. You got to be very careful. The other problem with things like True Image and Ghost are that they take forever to run.
Mm-hmm.
And so consequently, people don't back up often. One of the things that I do is I use a product called rSync. And rSync backs up only the newest stuff. So I pointed at all my at my documents directory where I keep all my documents.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, it only backs up the newest stuff. It does it automatically. I don't even know what happens. It takes seconds a day to do. The first time you run it, it takes forever because you're backing up everything.
Right.
But then it's only the new stuff. And so it's very fast and very easy, and it happens in the background, so I know I'm backed up. If you have to back up by yourself, and you know that the backup is going to take 3 hours to run because you're doing a ghost to the system, and then you have to take that ghost image and burn it somewhere, you may actually delay doing that.
And that's why programs like Backup My PC or Simple Backup or Retrospect can be scheduled to run in the middle of the night. They do incremental backups.
Right.
So if you search our link list for backup, we've talked about a lot of programs.
But those only back up your documents. Listen, we're going to take another quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, the entire Cole family, and me, Nick Francesco, all of you on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Wham's Michael
Should I talk while you guys air guitar for the rest of this?
Enjoy the music.
Dan's finding all kinds of great music. Here we go.
Yes.
All right, we're back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dan Cole.
And at 52 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites.
Roger Daltrey apparently has a lounge.
I must have played them all.
Has a lounge
but I never
act
seen
in
nothing
Vegas.
Like him on any amusement hall.
That but deaf, dumb and blind kid sure plays a mean pinball.
Cool.
Yeah, but Roger Daltrey
was
my
era.
Yeah, Roger Daltrey was on an episode of CSI Vegas as a lounge singer. It was really funny hearing him do Frank Sinatra songs.
Yeah, I bet it was. Oh my golly! All right, Nationwide Mutual Insurance. If you are a member of Nationwide, you probably got notification that 28,279 customers of its health insurance unit had their data stolen during an October 26th burglary of the offices.
They're not
of
on your side anymore.
Exactly. The place was robbed. Their backup tapes were stolen, along with computers and DVD players, other electronic gear. They say they're not that worried because you have to use a specific high-tech tape reader with matching software to actually read the thing. So the police are concluding it's unlikely that the data will be accessible to thieves. You know what? Once again, geez and crackers, how hard is it to encrypt the data tapes? All you have to do is, if you're using the right software, you tell it before you write the tape, encrypt the data. Yes, it takes a little longer. But then you wouldn't have 28,279 of your customers mad at you. Right now, of course, Nationwide is offering customers free identity theft insurance and credit monitoring for a year, which has got to cost more than encrypting the tapes to begin with would have cost. I just do not understand anybody who doesn't encrypt their backup tapes if they have this kind of important stuff on it. I mean, your stuff is just your stuff, that's fine. Knock yourself out. But you would think that they
Lawsuit
would.
City.
Well, exactly. Our next caller is Carl from Penn Yan. Welcome, Carl. What's your question?
Hey, I've got Verizon DSL.
Good for you.
And I cannot get online unless I get Outlook Express first. If I bring that up, then I know I'm online. And why? I don't know why that is.
Well, Outlook Express is an email program and has nothing to do with getting you online.
Oh, it doesn't?
No.
I don't know what that's about. So if you start up your machine and open up, say, Firefox or whatever, you can't get online.
No. Well, here's what I do. I listen to a jazz station, too. I click on the jazz station, and I get a message that says, the page cannot be displayed. Then if I get Outlook Express and bring that up, then go back to my jazz station, it comes right up.
What browser are you using?
I don't know. I'm very illiterate in computer. I don't even know what a browser is.
What icon do you click on to open a web page?
The big blue E?
No, I just click on, I got this jazz station thing on my, right on.
Right. What I'm wondering is, I'm wondering if Outlook Express doesn't start some program in the background, although it shouldn't.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a timing issue. When you launch the web browser, it takes a moment to initiate the DSL connection, and then...
It should be always on. My Frontier is always on.
Yeah. Well, see, this is Verizon, right?
Right.
I don't think you have to log in with Verizon.
No, you shouldn't have to.
No, you shouldn't have to.
Just click and run.
Unfortunately, Carl, this sounds like one of those questions that somebody's going to have to actually see the machine and do some poking around inside it. Well, so if you can bring it to a reputable dealer somewhere, you know, Dave and Steve are both up here in Rochester. You're down in Penyan. Yeah. Particularly in this weather, that's not going to be an easy jaunt.
We have a few clients in Penyan.
No problem. I just get
I tried downloading a different browser. You're probably using Internet Explorer, which is
most likely.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm using.
Yeah, try downloading Firefox at getfirefox.com and see if that works any different.
Okay, I'll try that then. Okay, thanks, guys.
Good luck, Carl.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it used to be you had to log in with the DSL and the cable.
Right.
And so Outlook Express would be sending your username and password for checking for mail.
Yeah.
That could possibly be it, but I don't know, except we've got customers in Palmyra area using Verizon DSL, and there's no login.
Right. Lauren says that Verizon is bridged, so no login is needed. So I don't know what that's about. Anyway, our next caller is Jeff from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Jeff. What's your question?
How you doing, guys? I have a question. I need to get a wireless... wireless print server to add to my wireless home network. Are you allowed to say product names on the radio?
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
All right. I bought a Netgear wireless router, and it really, really is not Mac-friendly. And I spent a lot of time with their tech support, and just, I don't think I'm returning the product. Do you guys know of any Mac-friendly wireless print servers that might be a solution for me?
Well, Apple has several. If you want to go that way.
That ought to be friendly to Macs. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, the issue may not be the Mac friendliness. It may be the protocol that the wireless print server is using. It's probably assuming SMB for a Windows printer. So on your Macintosh, you have to set it up as a Windows printer, not a network printer. And that may be what will work for you.
Okay.
If you go in Print Center, go to Add Printer, there's a More Printers button. And one of the options is Windows printing.
Yeah, my issue is, I mean, I have a Netgear wireless home router network, whatever. But I didn't think that it was necessary to have to buy the Airport Express or any of the Apple products. But from this experience,
it's not necessary, but it's often easier.
Yeah.
Often easier.
Yeah,
okay.
The Apple software tends to work better together. And the Apple has setup wizards that allow you to set things up a lot easier than the third-party routers.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
So that may be necessary if you want it to be easy.
Mm-hmm.
But all the products try to have some sort of a setup wizard, but many of them aren't Mac-friendly. They don't use Mac terms, which is tricky in the Mac world.
Right. All right, I'm afraid we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to everyone to whom we did not get. Call next week earlier and often, more often.
And one other thing we got to say again, we can't say it enough. Yes, we are aware that our archive server and podcast is down. We're working on it. As soon as we can get it back up, we will get it back up. You just got to bear with us, folks.
Yep. All right, we will be back next week with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, perhaps with Dan Cole, maybe with Rob Linton. I don't quite know what the deal is here. It is 59 minutes after the hour. I am Nick Francesco, and you have been listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe, and that's Soundbites. We'll see you back here next week, same bat time, same bat channel, on 1180 WHAM.